Well, from the rising tide of world anti-Semitism to Holocaust ignorance worldwide, we've got it covered today on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, thrilled to be with you. I barely can believe that this time next week, actually before this time next week, I should be in Israel, getting there a day ahead of the tour group. Met one of the gentlemen, one of our monthly supporters that's on the tour at my lecture in D.C. yesterday, and get there a day ahead and then meet everyone upon arrival in Israel. It is hard to believe, and God willing, don't know how many nights. We're trying to do it every night. It'll be daytime for you, but nighttime for me in Israel. Trying to do every night that we can live from Israel. So really, really looking forward to this. And those of you who are going with me, wonderful. Those who are asking about a tour next year, well, this is the first I've led. So let's take this one step at a time. But all going well, then God willing, we'll do it again. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Any Jewish-related questions you have, any Israel-related questions you have, my joy to take your questions. If you differ with me about Israel and the Jewish people, if you differ with me about Jesus being the Messiah, by all means, give me a call, 866-34-TRUTH. One of the things I want to talk to you about is world anti-Semitism and world ignorance about the Holocaust. I'm looking at a report, and I just posted this on Facebook, tweeted it out a little while ago. And according to a recent report, only 54% of the world population has heard of the Holocaust. Those saying, man, Jews, just look, it's tragic, it's horrific, it's unreal, but it happened, it's a long time ago, enough with this, and time to move on, and 54% of the world has heard of the Holocaust. So almost half of the world doesn't even know it happened. Two-thirds of the Jews of Europe annihilated, killed in cold blood. But worse yet, only one-third of the world population believes that the reports are true. If you want to hear something scary, according to this report by the ADL. In the Muslim world, those 65% or older say that 33% of them say that the number of Jews who died in the Holocaust has been greatly exaggerated. Among those 65 years old or younger, 51% believe the number has been greatly exaggerated. And boy, a shocker for me, having been in India so many times, and India not known as a heavily anti-Semitic country, but largely Hindu, population over 800 million Hindus. According to this, those 65 years old and above that are Hindu, two-thirds of them believe that the number of Jews who died has been greatly exaggerated, and those 65 and younger, 48% believe the number has been greatly exaggerated, and 11%, which is the highest of any group, even higher than Muslims under 65, believe that the Holocaust is a myth. Wow. Wow. It just reminds us that the day will come, as the prophets foretold, that the whole world will gather against Jerusalem, and there will be a turning of the Jewish people to God, and the Messiah will return as he's welcomed back by a Jewish Jerusalem. And God himself will fight for his people. Does not mean that everything Israel does is right, and it means that Jews today still need Jesus like everyone else. But it does mean there is something supernatural going on when you have this level of ignorance, this level of hatred, this level of denial. Whole lot to talk about, and your calls, 866-34-TRUTH.
fire we
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to the Line of Fire. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. I posted a picture last night on my Facebook page on Ask Dr. Brown. If you're not following us there, please do. The moment a new article is out, we let you know. The moment we have new video, we let you know. We let you know what's coming on the show each day. Special guests, inspirational quotes, discussion questions, etc., etc. I posted this picture last night. Pam Geller and her organization have launched ads. They are on the buses in Washington, D.C. I'm genuinely surprised that these have been allowed to be printed. Just with the climate as it is in America today, I'm genuinely surprised. So if you go to my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, AskDR Brown, I'll just scroll down a bit. I posted it 14 hours ago, and I said, wow, check out these ads that are running on DC buses. Now, I didn't say wonderful. I didn't say terrible. I said, wow, check them out. So I've been criticized by a few for even posting it, but it has a picture of Haji Amin al-Husseini, who is was the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, of Palestine, in the 20s, 30s, into the 40s. And it's him meeting with Adolf Hitler because they stood together, wanted to see the annihilation of the Jews. Now, Haji Amin al-Husseini, it is well known, any of those who know the recent history of the Middle East, that he is kind of the grandfather of the radical movements today, be it Muslim Brotherhood or Hamas or Hezbollah or others, that they can be directly or indirectly traced back to him. Yasser Arafat even boasted of a connection with Haji Amin al-Husseini. And it's a picture of the two of them meeting, and it says this, Adolf Hitler and his staunch ally, the leader of the Muslim world, Haji Amin al-Husseini. Now, Haji Amin al-Husseini launched intifadas against the Jewish people living in Palestine a couple decades before the establishment of the modern state of Israel. So in other words, there were inflammatory things that he was involved with, and he drew on earlier Islamic anti-Semitism. Now, there are streams of Islam that would not have that same level of Jew hatred, but much of mainstream Islam does have it as a major focus, or I should say as a clear tenet that's held to or even presupposed. So was he the leader of the Muslim world? Well, he was a key leader. I would say it like that. And then in big print, Islamic Jew hatred, it's in the Quran. 2/3 of all U.S. aid goes to Islamic countries. Stop racism and all aid to Islamic countries. Now, for me, it's overstated. In other words, there is legitimate aid to Islamic countries, and America has strategic interest in many, many different ways. However, it does strike at a key point. There is, especially in radical Islam, which could be, let's say, 1.5 billion Muslims in the world. Let's say 15% would be in the category of radical, at least 10%, but say about 15%. I was speaking to a Middle East scholar, former ambassador to Pakistan, a Pakistani man, professor, does op-eds for New York Times, was an observer for elections in Palestinian territories in the past at the request of Jimmy Carter, and on, so certainly qualified, fluent in Arabic, and he was telling me, we were comparing notes on the number of radical Muslims in the world, but let's say it's 15%, and we were stuck in the airport in Chicago, we got to talk for a while, but let's just say it's 15% of 1.5 billion, all right? 15% of 1.5 billion, you are talking about something close to the population of the United States. 20% of 1.5 billion would be the population of the United States. So 15%, you're talking about well over 200 million people, over 225 million people. You're talking about a large amount of human beings, hostile, radical to the West, and hating Israel and the Jewish people. So this is, I'm literally surprised that these have been allowed to run. There's going to be all kinds of outcry against it. But let the conversation happen. Let there be a legitimate discussion about these issues. 866-34-TRUTH. I'll talk to you more about the Holocaust and denial of that, ignorance of that, and some anti-Semitic surveys. Again, a lot of things I want to get into with you and open up the Hebrew Scriptures as well, share some insights. But first, let's go to the phones. Juwan, Center Reach, Long Island. Juwan, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Dr. Brown, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well, thanks. How about you?
Wonderful, wonderful, sir. I just wanted to ask you a question. It's in regards to the it's an Israeli question, the country of Israel. And it's in regards to the 60,000 Africans that were or have been seeking a safe haven in Israel since 2006. And I heard some individuals speaking about this. Some of my colleagues were talking about it, sharing information and videos on Facebook. And I just wanted to get your take on it because I truly respect your opinion and I know how well-informed you are. So these Africans have been denied the ability to work in Israel or find a home. Many of the native Israelis have made it hard for Jews who even want to rent some of these Africans seeking asylum a home. And also Netanyahu has basically denounced these refugees, calling them infiltrators, and he advocates rounding them up and expelling them out of the country. And any Jews who stand for these Africans to receive some asylum or some assistance or just the ability to work in Israel have been met with tremendous backlash. So I just wanted to know, can you speak to that at all in regards to these, you know, African infiltrators and what Israel's position is currently now? And, you know, I'll just listen to your thoughts.
Yeah, and just one quick question for you. Do you have a position on illegal immigrants coming into America?
Absolutely.
What's your view on that?
My view on illegal immigrants coming to America is that, of course, America is a land governed by laws, and all people are subject to laws. However, the immigrants that do come into America, I believe they are providing a labor for capitalism to succeed. Capitalism in America cannot succeed without some type of...
All right, so in other words, even though laws are being broken, you feel that they should be granted citizenship?
I believe, yes. I believe America wouldn't be America if it wasn't for immigrants. Everyone came from some other country to America.
Right.
And I think that the Mexicans are unfairly targeted. I think that a lot of minorities are unfairly targeted. When you'll have millions of illegal immigrants, say from Russia, from China, from Spain, from Brazil, you know, there are illegal immigrants from all
right.
over the world here, but they're not targeted. The
only okay, all right, yeah, got it. All right, I just wanted to know your position on that, which I appreciate. Okay, there are a couple of dimensions. First, over the years, Israel, at great cost and effort, has brought Ethiopian Jews and others into the country. There was the famous Operation Moses and different things. Where they were involved in doing that. And that has been a major issue of, okay, now that these people have come into the country, how to get them fully incorporated? Because Israel's constantly dealing with an influx of immigrants. And bear in mind, if you take the population of Israel, you mentioned 60,000, right?
Yeah.
So the population of Israel, say Israeli Jews, that's 6 million. That's mm-hmm. 1/50th the size of the United States. So now if you want to take that 60,000 number, multiply it by 50, right? So you're now dealing with millions of immigrants coming in. But so that's the one thing. There has been success in incorporating Ethiopians and others into the country. And in some cases, there hasn't been success. In some cases, there's been prejudice. There's been unequal treatment. But because Israel, excuse me, tends to be very humanistic and leftist in its thinking, it really does work for civil rights for all and tries to work against the discrimination. But there have been some obstacles with Africans who have come in, even that Israel's helped bring in to the country. The other thing is those seeking asylum, and here's what you have to realize, that they're coming into Israel by way of Muslim countries. And they're not, either they don't want to stay in the Muslim countries or they're not allowed to stay in the Muslim countries. So now they end up illegally coming into Israel. And that's the challenge. So yeah, here's a quote from Netanyahu, May of 2012. If we don't stop their entry, the problem that currently stands at 60,000 could grow to 600,000. And that threatens our existence as a Jewish state. That would be like 30 million people coming into America that America had to absorb. It's a genuine humanitarian issue. Many Israelis are upset about it because they want to be of help and they recognize these people who are seeking asylum. But the question is, you don't get into Israel without going through other Muslim countries. Why won't those with much bigger populations incorporate them? It's a genuine issue. I would say this, Israel is trying to deal with it rightly, but it's a genuine problem. I don't know what the solution is. It's definitely a problem, though. All right. Maybe I'll address that a bit more on the other side, but thank you for raising that.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us, 866-34-TRUTH. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. All right. Just very quickly, and I, my clock or my eye on the clock was slightly off. I talked a couple of seconds off the air there. What I want to say is this. I think it's very good, and Joanne, if you're still listening, I think it's very good that Israel's held to a high standard. I think that's excellent. I was at a meeting of the Jerusalem Foundation in New York City, 1991. I believe it was a $1,000 a plate dinner. Someone invited me to be there with some other friends, a wealthy person that a friend of mine knew, invited me to be there. And I still remember the meal, thinking you'd get a better meal at McDonald's than this, $1,000 a plate. But it was obviously just proceeds for this foundation. And there was a discussion moderated by Dan Rather. It was between Henry Kissinger and Fuad Ajami, who's a Johns Hopkins professor, Lebanese, and respected Middle Eastern scholar. And when it came time for Q&A at the end, I got up to ask a question. There was a gentleman in front of me. He said, no, you go first. So I raised a couple of questions for Dr. Kissinger, a question for Dr. Kissinger and a question for Ajami, Professor Ajami. But I got to interact a little bit with Dan Rather, and he made the comment that Israel is held to a higher standard by the media. In other words, excuse me, as Fuad Ajami had said that Iraq uses nerve gas against its own people, the Kurds, and the UN does nothing, or the media does nothing, and Israel uses tear gas, and there's an uproar, and the UN calls, and he's just talking about the unequal coverage. Now, here he's speaking as a Lebanese man, as an Arab, and as a scholar of Middle Eastern politics. Well, all that to say, I think it's good that Israel is held to a high standard. And I'm the first to say that Israel is not blameless. But if you want to compare the humanitarian record of Israel, dealing with refugees, compared to the surrounding nations, why are there Palestinian refugee camps in Arab nations, in Muslim nations? Why? Because it is a written policy from the Arab League going back decades. Do not resettle the refugees. If you do, then the whole case against Israel goes out the window. So, yes, let's hold Israel to a high standard, but not an unrealistic standard. So Israel is trying to deal with an issue and a problem, but there are a lot of people in Africa and only a small amount of there's only a small amount of area in Israel. What about the surrounding Muslim nations that are much more able to incorporate Africans? What about the nations that you have to pass through first before you get into Israel from Africa? Why not take refuge there? Could it be because Islam is one of the problems that they're getting away from in some cases? So, difficult situation, but let's look at what Israel has done in terms of resettling refugees, and their track record is excellent in that regard. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Andrew in Washington, D.C. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, thank you so much. I was exactly going to ask the same question the first guy asked you. I disagree with you in some areas.
Please go ahead.
Yes, I support Israel financially and with my prayer. And anybody can choose to go to wherever he wants. And I know every country is governed by a law about refugees, but you don't mistreat them inhumanely. If I decide to go to reside in Arab country, that is fine. If I go to Israel as a refugee and I am treated inhumanly, it breaks the heart of Africans who love the Jewish people and are supporting them. Look, let me tell you this. My twin brother lived in Israel 20 years. We are trying to teach Hebrew. My brother is teaching Hebrew in in Ghana. So if we hear that and we see it on YouTube, that Jewish people are maltreating Africans, it's appalling. You see, I support Israel with prayer and finances. Mm-hmm. I'm even planning to go with the tour group, one of the tour groups. And if it's not going to be governed by the laws that govern refugees in the whole world, then it's bad. You know this scripture which says that the Jews were refugees in Egypt, and that God requires them to treat foreigners very well. I've forgotten that scripture, but it's biblical. So I'm thinking, President, I was told that President Netanyahu is anti-black big time. And I can see from the YouTube, the pictures and the what I saw. So please, I believe my brethren, our brothers in Israel, will treat fellow Africans. You remember the Simon of Cyrene who helped Jesus to carry the cross? He's a black man. So please, I mean, since you are a voice of the Jewish people, be the voice of refugees too, because we are accountable to the same God.
Yeah, Andrew, let me just say this. First, I did point out the first that Israel has brought in Ethiopian Jews and others in past years.
Jews. They are not different.
No. Hang on. Let me just. Can I finish?
Yes. Go ahead.
I also said that at times there has been discrimination against them because of color. Right. So I said that was an issue, but it's something that is addressed because for the most part, the Ethiopian refugees are respected by the people of Israel and their demeanor and their conduct has been highly respected. As for the African refugees, is the problem that they're black or is the problem that they're refugees and Israel doesn't have the power to assimilate them? But my statement was it is a problem. So I'm not saying that I don't know what the solution is, to be honest with you. Should they be treated better? Let me say this. I'm totally sympathetic to what you're saying, and especially what motivates you to say it as a lover of Israel, and you don't want Israel to get a bad reputation. So I'm not defending. I don't know what the solution is, but I appreciate you sharing your heart and your perspective. That's very meaningful to me. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I'm saying that the Israeli authorities should send the refugees back home. That is the law. If somebody comes to your country and you don't want the person, I am an American citizen too. Americans are sending a lot of.
Stay right there. All right, stay right there, Andrew. I've got a break. All right, got a bunch of you on hold. I will get to your calls. Again, all of you, if your station is about to lose us, keep listening right online. Ask Dr. Brown, ask D.R. Brown, right on your cell phone, your tablet, your computer. And we'll talk about this just a little bit longer. Have you ordered your copy of the Tree of Life version of the Bible, the first complete translation with Messianic sensitivities of the entire Bible by a team of scholars? We meant to end this last week, but we keep getting requests this week. So your gift of any size, we recommend a gift of $30 or more because of the cost of this hardcover Bible. But your gift of any size, we want to help as many as possible. So those who can give more will help those who have less. Call right now to order. Copies due in about 2 weeks. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Again, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us, friends, on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. I do have a bunch of things I want to share with you, but we are in the midst of taking some calls, and we've had a couple of folks call in today, interestingly, on the same day, because this issue has not come up a lot over the months, about the mistreatment of African refugees seeking asylum in Israel. One report I'm looking at notes that the refugees first trekked from countries like Sudan and Eritrea and congregated in Egypt. They were escaping from ethnic cleansing and dictatorship, Egypt being North Africa, but were confronted with racism and repression in Egypt. The harsh climate for African refugees culminated in a December 30th, 2005, Egyptian police massacre of Sudanese refugees, which convinced many that it was time to move on to Israel. But while no Israeli forces are shooting Africans, that's the best that can be said about their welcome in the country. This is a report very critical about Israel. There are others that would say it is much more difficult and nuanced, and Israel is trying to help, but is being overwhelmed by refugees. So, Andrew, back to you. I just want to give you the last word. I want to get to some other calls. But again, I'm very sympathetic to what you're saying. I deplore any mistreatment of any human being. Obviously, I think a major focus needs to be put on the Muslim nations to say, well, why couldn't the refugees be incorporated into your nation? They had to flee. I mean, there's a massacre that they have to flee from in Egypt. But back to you. You get the last word in on this. So go ahead, Andrew.
Yes, I accept it. I think refugees are governed by law, international law, and they should be sent back home. It's on Israel to send these refugees back home, not to mistreat them. I was so much appalled when I saw this YouTube, thinking that I am an African and I'm helping the Jews with my prayer, with my finances, and this is going on. It's bad. Besides that, just imagine, I told you my twin brother is teaching Hebrew in Ghana. Who would want to learn Hebrew? But we have to, because we love the Jewish people. So they should treat refugees humanely, so that we know that, you know.
But you're saying they should be sent back, though. Some of them were fleeing from dictatorship and ethnic cleansing. So wouldn't that be sending them back to mistreatment or death?
There's a law. So why don't you seek help from the appropriate corner, the United Nations, to let them know that these refugees are there and we can't contain them. So do something about it. I think it's possible. Something can be done about it.
But, yeah. Well, you know, yeah. Let me just say this to you, Andrew. Yeah. And I appreciate you weighing in, sir. And I appreciate what your brother's doing. First, don't base everything just on a YouTube video. I'm sure you know that things can be misrepresented on any side. So keep looking at all of the facts. Look, there have been protests. There have been protest marches with the African refugees. But let me just say this, because I did say I'd let you have the last word on this conversation. I want to encourage you, sir, to keep praying for Israel and supporting Israel, regardless of whether Israel's actions are good or bad. For example, here I am, a Jewish believer in Jesus. I want my Jewish people to know the Lord. The ultra-Orthodox Jews militantly oppose faith in Jesus. Secular Israelis are, by and large, either indifferent to Jesus or some hostile to him. And the secular population is far from godly and moral in many ways, although there is a high ethic that they live by in other ways. But I pray for Israel. I stand with Israel because of biblical principles, as well as overall justice in the Middle East. But I want to encourage you to keep praying, loving Israel, regardless of whether Israel loves back. And then together, everyone will do our best to hold them to account, to do the right thing. But Andrew, thank you for the call and for your passion. But keep standing strong. All right, back with your calls. And interesting article I'm looking at in the Jerusalem Post, that the immigration to Israel is primarily young men looking for work, not even refugee status. That's interesting. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, if you've been trying to get through, we just had a bunch of calls drop out during the break, which means we have suddenly opened up a couple of lines if you'd like to get through. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me just give a little more context to the situation in terms of Africans coming into Israel. And I didn't plan on discussing this, but callers have raised issues and raised them passionately and strongly. looking at an article, Jerusalem Post, and it is from January 7th of this year by Yonatan Jakubowicz. And the editorial says Eritreans and Sudanese are coming to Israel in search of work, not for refugee status. Now, it says that in recent years, Israel has absorbed more illegal immigrants than any other country in the European Union in absolute numbers. And if we consider the numbers as a percentage of Israel's population, the picture is much more extreme. For example, in 2011, Israel absorbed, ready for this, 10 times as many infiltrators, so these are illegal immigrants, 10 times as many infiltrators as France, 20 times as many as Italy, and 100 times as many as Spain. Now, is there a way to treat people in more humanely? Certainly, that's always going to be an issue. And a fair issue to raise. And as I said, I don't defend everything Israel does. But let's understand that this is a very, very large problem. And again, these refugees have all had to pass through at least one other country. For example, another Muslim country to get there, or simply another country before they get into Israel, which means that they have gone through a country that has the UN High Commissioner for Refugees working with them. The editorial points out, we must understand that the majority of infiltrators are coming from Eritrea and Sudan and do not meet the criteria for refugee status according to the UN Convention relating to the status of refugees. Most of them include people who passed through the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, explicitly stated upon arrival that they had come to Israel in search of work. A minimum wage salary for 1 month in Israel is the same as the average salary for 3 years of work in Eritrea. Additionally, according to UN figures, 85% of infiltrators to Israel are young men, which is a distinct characteristic of economic migrants. All infiltrators to Israel have passed through at least one other country in which there was an active branch of the UNHCR and have paid huge sums of money to reach the Israeli border. So they're, according to this editorial, primarily coming to Israel in search of work. And now that puts an even further strain in terms of, okay, how to incorporate all of these people. You're talking about, compared to America, this would be several million new refugees coming in that could multiply to several tens of million easily. So, of course, it's a humanitarian issue. Don't downplay it at all. But let's step back and be realistic in terms of what expectations can be as well. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me just read a bit more of this article to you. Again, a report from the Anti-Defamation League, the ADL. This is from yesterday, May 14th. A new survey suggests that many Asians, Africans, Middle Easterners, young people, Muslims, and Hindus believe that facts about the genocide, meaning the Holocaust, have been distorted. Only 54% of the world's population has heard of the Holocaust. They surveyed more than 53,000 people in over 100 countries. The survey was conducted by First International Resources, but that figure speaks to only those who have heard of it. Only a third of the world's population believe the genocide has been accurately described in its historical accounts. Some said they thought the number of people who died has been exaggerated. Others said they believe it's a myth. 30% of respondents said it's probably true that Jews still talk too much about what happened to them in the Holocaust. 70 years after the liberation of Auschwitz, two-thirds of the world's population don't know the Holocaust happened, or they deny it. These beliefs follow some unexpected patterns, too. The Middle East and North Africa had the largest percentage of doubters. with only 8% of respondents reporting that they had heard of the genocide and believed descriptions of it were accurate. But only 12% of respondents in sub-Saharan Africa said the same, and only 23% in Asia. People in these groups were likely to say they believe the number of deaths has been exaggerated. Just over half of Middle Easterners and a third of Asians and Africans think the body count has been distorted over time. Again, wow. Just the whole idea after the Holocaust, never again, the world will learn. Well, the world doesn't learn. And deception is deception. The world doesn't learn. 866-34-TRUTH. To the phones. And I was going to San Diego, but I won't. Let's go to Prince Frederick, Maryland. Bruce, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Brown. I so appreciate your work. I've got two testimonials, and then I want your comment on them, if I could. In 1968, in a propaganda course at the Air Force Academy, I had to study the Holocaust, and I looked at what were still top secret photographs of the victims. There is no exaggeration. This is the other most documented event in human history. For some reason, the Nazis were obsessed with writing down all their atrocities by numbers. And the other comment I've got that I heard Tom Clancy make the remark on in 1987 is that the radical Islamic groups periodically make sure they assassinate journalists just to make sure everybody holds Israel to a higher standard, which is just a phony way of saying they're afraid to report the truth.
Yeah, well, this much we do know for sure, sir, and thanks for the kind words as well. We know for sure that, for example, when two Israeli soldiers who had wandered in the wrong area were brought into a Palestinian police headquarters and then were beaten to death and virtually torn limb from limb, that people who were photographing the event had their cameras, journalists, taken from them, stuff destroyed. One guy was able to smuggle out some of his stuff, which is how we got the ghastly pictures that we did. And by the way, one of those murderers was released recently prisoners being released from Israel. One of those murderers was released, one of the ones that came to the window with blood on his hands. And this was part of what was seen and it's shocking is the nation of Israel. We also know that there are times when things are staged where, you'll see the same guy being carried. He's wounded. He's dying. He's being carried by his friends, and he's being photographed, and then later you see him walking out. I mean, that's been well documented. There were even cases where Israel was accused of killing a child, and this horrific picture. You know, here's the child cowering next to the father in the midst of crossfire, and then he's killed, and Israel indicted before the world media, and it turns out that he was killed by his own people in crossfire. So it's not to say that this is the only way it is. But certainly there is a frequent media bias against Israel. I remember one time when I was overseas, I put on BBC News, and it was BBC World News, and the reporting was so blatantly, unapologetically anti-Israel. It was shocking. As much as I'd read about it and documented it, it was shocking to see in action. In my book, Our Hands Are Stained with Blood, in 1991, I cited many examples, even when the press would report things, cases in America. And by the way, BBC News was even found guilty in the court of discrimination against Israel in its news reporting and fined within the last few years. But one of the things that was striking was a news report would say Israel kills Palestinians. And then a day later, Israelis killed by bomb. It's like, well hang on. The bomb just blew up? Whose bomb? What bomb? Oh, they didn't say it was a Palestinian suicide bomber or something. You know, so the one thing, if Israel did it, it was active. They're the guilty party. If it was, they were the victims, it was just something that happened to them. Gun kills Israel. Oh, the gun just went off. So, you know, it's often subtle, but it is documented and it is clearly seen. And there's an organization called CAMERA. If you go to camera.org. It's not about photography. It's about accurate reporting in the Middle East. They're constantly calling the media to account. And then if you go to a site like palwatch.org or memoritv, memritv.org, you'll see often what's happening behind the scenes, what is being taught in schools, what's being broadcast on TV, what's being said by Muslim leaders that's not reported in the West. And those are excellent sources. So, Bruce, thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. When we come back, along with your calls, I want to open up the Hebrew Scriptures and give you an insight or two of some things I've been studying, working on, writing, looking at. We'll do that when we come back on this Thoroughly Jewish Thursday right here on the Line of Fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to our Thoroughly Jewish Thursday broadcast. Oh, man, I keep forgetting to use some of our lead-in Jewish music. All right, we'll do it. Matt, you can remind me to do that. We always like to introduce some of our segments with some thoroughly Jewish music. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Okay, if you were listening yesterday, you heard me mention my traveling nightmare. Oh, it seemed like a movie, a bad movie. It seemed like time stood still. How often do you sit in an airport waiting 12 and a half hours at an airport for a less than 2 hour flight? How often do you have 27 hours of delays, cancellations, and changes? How often do you have in the midst of that a few days without luggage? And add to that, in one day on one flight, 24 changes of flight, location, gate, equipment. So I finished up my lecture at FRC yesterday. You can watch it online. I really encourage you to. I think you'll find it really eye-opening and helpful on many, many fronts. So I finished up the lecture. I had an 8 o'clock flight because initially I was going to be meeting with some folks, but I had to get out earlier. So if you go to AskDrBrown.org, click on latest video. AskDrBrown.org, click on latest video. You can watch the lecture I gave at FRC. And again, I think you'll find it to be helpful and informative. So you'll also appreciate the wardrobe, which I had bought at Macy's that morning about 90 minutes before the lecture, because I had no luggage. I had to run over to Macy's and from head to toe get a wardrobe. And Nancy commented that I look like an airline pilot, but that's good. Airline pilots look very professional. Anyway, so I'm at the airport to fly. I had an 8 o'clock flight. There was an earlier flight leaving at 5:45. I was trying to get on, so I rushed right over there. They got me on standby, so I ended up in the last row on the plane, in the middle. So it turns out the gal to my right was a TV correspondent from Croatia, and conservative Catholic, and a lot of questions about gay activism. So we talked at length, maybe half the flight. Well, then I turned to my left, and there's a young man there, and just coming back from college, and he's double majoring in math and in computer science. And we get chatting, very sharp young man, raised in an evangelical home, but now questioning things, considered himself to be agnostic. And I mentioned the name of mathematician John Lennox at Oxford. He goes, oh, yes, didn't he debate Dawkins? I said, oh, so you know. So anyway, we talked at length. I pulled out my computer, opened up some Hebrew and Greek texts explaining how textual studies are done and so on. And I said, you know, look, I hate soundbite cheap answers. I hate these little answers where you just, you know, it doesn't really satisfy, but it kind of wards off the objection. And he was agreeing. So we talked and we agreed that a lot of people don't want to hear your objection because they're afraid it'll challenge their own faith. They don't want to hear what you have to say because they're afraid that it's going to mess with them. Sometimes someone will press a point, their issue with God, their issue with Scripture, and we get annoyed with them or we get a little angry with them. Why? Because it strikes something in us. So I'm working my Job commentary, and some days ago I was commenting on the verse where He says it's Job 6:21, and he's accusing the friends of becoming like these unreliable wadis, these streams in the desert, and you expect them to be there and they're not, or you know, they get covered over or disappear. And he said, that's what you friends, that's how you've been to me. You've been that unreliable. Well, he then says something in the second half of the verse, and it's a play on words in Hebrew, tir'u chatat v'tira'u. So here, tir'u, tira'u. Tir'u, you see, tira'u, you are afraid or terrified. So you see something fearful and you are terrified. What does he mean? Well, my understanding and context there is that he's saying, you see what happened to me, the calamities that I've passed through, the terrible things that I have endured. You see what's happened to me, and it terrifies you. So what do you do rather than say, Job, we don't understand this, because we've known you to be a godly man all these years, and what happened to you is like the destruction that comes on the wicked. It doesn't make sense. It's like a believer walking with the Lord and dying and finding himself in hell. No, that. Well, then what's your alternative? Well, obviously you weren't really a believer. Well, Job, there must be some sin and God's trying to chastise you as it goes on. Job, you're just wicked. That's why these things are happening to you. That's why they happen to your kids. And what it is they see this fearful thing happen and it terrifies them. That's, in other words, I can see it in your eyes. I can see in your eyes that my situation is troubling to you. So what do you have to do? You have to fit me into one of your neat theological categories. You have to fit me into one of your neat theological categories and so that everything works nicely. Otherwise, you don't know what to do with this. Otherwise, you don't know how to handle this. And I believe it's often a weakness that we have. Rather than face an issue head on, as I've done with answering Jewish objections to Jesus for decades and written 5 volumes on it and spent countless hours in dialogue with rabbis and counter-missionaries and public debates and private interaction, bring it on. Bring the best objections. I'm talking about educated men. I'm talking about devoted men. I'm talking about deep, clear, thinking, logical men. I'm talking about serious objections. Bring them on. And let's follow the truth wherever it leads. And if my faith cannot withstand the scrutiny of the truth, then something's wrong with my faith. Because God is a God of truth. And there may be questions we can't answer. That's happened plenty of times. Like, I've got an answer for numbers 1 through 10, but number 10 I'm not sure about. Let me think about it. Let me give it some thought. That's fine. That's legit. Let's do that. But let's not just come up with soundbite answers to protect our own faith. Better to tell someone, that's a great point, and it's a very challenging and serious point. Let me give it some prayerful thought and study. Well, speaking about study, how would you like to read the Bible in English, but with messianic sensitivities, with Messiah for Christ, with Torah for law, whenever that translation is what the writer was intending, with Yeshua for Jesus, with Jacob for James, and with some other key terms, Olam Haba for the world to come and things like that, with a glossary to introduce you to the terms. It's all in the first of its kind, Tree of Life Bible, a team of scholars together doing a new translation of the entire Bible, Old Testament and New Testament. And for the first time now available as a complete Bible, we have the hardcover edition on their way to us. Last week was the last week to do this, but we've still had people requesting it, so I've extended it just one more week. Your gift of any size, but we're recommending a gift of $30 or more, and we'll send you a complete copy of the Tree of Life Messianic version of the Bible. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. One more time, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, the lies will continue to be told about Israel and the Jewish people. Don't be intimidated. Don't be daunted. Overcome the lies with the truth. Well, from the rising tide of world anti-Semitism to Holocaust ignorance worldwide, we've got it covered today on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
שתי הלומות של אור גולשות ומתרגשות רוצות כבר לעבור גם אלוהים כבר מתחשק לא לעבור.
Okay, you hear that music, that means it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and I can hardly believe it that just a few days from now I will be back in Israel, God willing, and for the first time with a tour group, leading a tour, so those are going to be joining me. Can't wait to see you. I'm scheduled to get in a day ahead and then to meet you upon your arrival. And there'll be others coordinating your trip on the way. We've got team leaders and everything set and looking forward to an awesome time and as many days as we can. And we've been working with the hotels and we think we've got everything worked out in advance and the right connection to do live radio. But hopefully coming quite a few days from Israel, live from Israel. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got Jewish-related questions. We've got Jewish-related answers. Before we go to some of your calls, first hour I talked about a new survey by the Anti-Defamation League, ADL, with some shocking information, regarding the amount of Holocaust ignorance worldwide and even Holocaust denial worldwide remains shocking. And, well, what can you say? It's shocking and it's not shocking because that is also the way things have been. There wouldn't have been a Holocaust without lies against Israel and the Jewish people. But the surveys have also revealed a lot of anti-Semitic stereotypes about Jews. And respondents to the survey, there are 11 anti-Semitic stereotypes. Anti-Semitic stereotypes like Jews are more loyal to Israel than to whatever country they live in, or Jews have too much power in the business world, or Jews have too much power in international financial markets, or Jews have too much control of the United States government, or Jews have too much control of the global media, or Jews are responsible for most of the world's wars, etc., etc. And those who said that 6 of the 11 statements were probably true, 6 of the 11, that's 26% of the world's population, 26%. And check this out, Middle East and North Africa, so North Africa countries like Libya and Egypt, Islamic countries, 74% of those surveyed in the Middle East and North Africa said yes, at least 6 out of the 11 statements are probably true. One of them is people hate Jews because of the way Jews behave. Jews think they're better than other people. Now, sometimes there are Jews who fit these categories, etc. There are certain things that are accurate in certain times, but statement after statement is a stereotype, is a mischaracterization. For example, Jews are more loyal to Israel than to whatever country they live in. I wish that Jews in America were more loyal to Israel. I wish that Jews in America put more emphasis on voting for candidates that were Israel-friendly. For some, it's not near the type of the top of the list for them. But here's a surprise, all right? Here's a surprise. 69% of those surveyed in Greece believe that 6 of the 11 statements were probably true. And in Iran, only 56%, which is fascinating, but still, that's over half of the population. In the Americas, 19%, so still almost 1 in 5. The Jews, always a stumbling block, always under attack, always misunderstood, and always loved by God, even in the midst of sin and rebellion.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You've got Jewish-related questions. We've got Jewish-related answers. I'm going to go to your calls momentarily, but I was looking for divine appointments in the midst of 27 hours of flight cancellations, flight changes, and all kinds of bizarre mishaps. Okay, Lord, there's got to be something redemptive in the midst of this. Well, I spoke at some length with a gentleman who is a scholar, professor at Boston University. He's a Pakistani. He served as an ambassador. He was on the ground during Palestinian elections, going to mosques, speaking with Palestinians about why they were voting what they were voting, why they were doing as an observer that Jimmy Carter had requested, was there, an observation team. Many of the scholars I was mentioning, Middle Eastern scholars, oh yeah, friends, colleagues of his. And as we were discussing Israel and the Palestinians, here again is a Muslim from Pakistan, now living in the States, and he was verifying point after point of my understanding of the history and of the narrative and of the larger issues involved and how people make a terrible mistake by focusing on the micro, and Israel did this and Israel did that to the Palestinians, which if they did wrong, they did wrong, it needs to be addressed, and not looking at the macro. So an example would be, let's just say, for 6 months, you had been invading my property and stealing all of our vegetables from our vegetable garden and things like that, and kicking the dog and you know, 6 months of this, and I turned the other cheek, I looked the other way, and then finally one day I went over to your fence and I lost my temper and I screamed and yelled at you, "What do you think you're doing? You're stealing, you're breaking, what do you think you're doing?" And that gets captured on YouTube. Mike Brown loses his temper. Mike Brown does this, does that. Well, okay, I shouldn't have done that. And this is not meant to be a perfect analogy. I shouldn't have done that. But let's look at the larger story. Where does the real guilt lie? And often people look at the macro, they miss the macro, they miss the larger narrative, the larger issue, the larger history, and they just focus on the micro. 866-34-TRUTH. Let us go to the phone, starting in Alexandria, Virginia. Mame, thanks for holding over from the last hour. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you, Dr. Roberts. I'm trying to respond to one of your callers, maybe two. Yeah, and it was about the mistreatment of illegal Africans that are in Israel.
Yes.
I am.
And Mame, what's your own background?
I'm an Ethiopian-American.
Okay, thank you. That's why I was asking. Yes, please, go ahead.
Yeah, who has been living in America for the last 18 years. And I have some information that I wanted to share with you guys. You've mentioned that there is a little bit of mistreatment in Israel towards the Ethiopian Jews. Yeah, they are being mistreated. Of course, that started way before they even got to Israel. While they're waiting in the camp for them to be taken to Israel, the women were being given the birth control that are working, or like they're being coerced into accepting this birth control for not having kids to control the population of Ethiopians. If they refuse to take that one, they are threatened not to be taken to Israel. Of course, these people. They have.
Now you're talking about
when Israel
went into Ethiopia to.
Yes.
To right. So they were right. They were going to try to help. You agree though that they were going to try to help Ethiopians. They were not doing this for their benefit in Israel.
No. They are going there with that Operation Mossad thing. And yeah, they are trying.
But you're saying that in the midst of it, there was mistreatment of the Ethiopians. So
yeah,
Israel was going to help the Ethiopians, but there was mistreatment in the midst of it.
Yeah, if we talk about the truth, if we're Christian and if we're like trying to bring the truth out, we have to be, we cannot be biased.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm a Christian. Okay, I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. So I when I hear something that needs to be corrected or that needs to be bring out, I have mm-hmm. to step
yes.
in and let you know. That
Go ahead.
What I'm trying to say is, of course, the mistreatment of those Ethiopian Jewish started way before they got into Israel, okay? They got into Israel, and that mistreatment hasn't stopped. A lot of Jewish people went out and against this treatment. They went out and demonstrated with those Ethiopians. Okay, they are against what are being done to these Ethiopians.
Right, so you're talking about Israelis in Israel.
Yeah. Really?
Saying that the Ethiopian, right. So, yeah, agreed. And this is something, as I said, that the nation tries to address because it does want to be humanitarian, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It has to be humanitarian. And the treatment didn't stop there, and it followed them once they got into Israel. I'm going to rest my case on that one there, and I wanted to go over it with the people that are put in the camp, those Africans. Trust me, there some of them are those Ethiopians too. Ethiopians, Eritreans, and Sudanese. I know you said that there are countries that they had to pass to get to Israel. Yeah, those countries were not, you know, as humanitarian as Israeli, so they thought. They got there and they put into those camps and being mistreated. And like, you know, Israel, having the history of being mistreated and tortured and all that, I don't think they should do what they had gone through to other people. Those Africans, they have high regards to Israel. That's why they wanted to leave their country, not because they're comfortable. It's because they could not leave their country. And I don't think it's because of economic problem. There are countries like Eritrea that war.
Yeah, with war, right. It varies. In other words, there's no question, you know, Sudanese refugees and Eritrean refugees, they've been, Ethiopia, you've been through a lot of...
Ethiopian refugees too. Dictators
are ruling there have been real challenges and issues there. Some may be economic immigrants. That's why I said that's an editorial. But here, this is what we agree on. I don't know what the solution is because Israel cannot just absorb refugees endlessly because of limited population, limited resources, and things like that. But we do agree that whatever can be done to treat people humanely in the midst of trying to work out the process, and if there is any anti-African or anti-Black sentiment, that needs to be addressed. So Israel's far from a perfect country, and that's why I let others speak, Andrew speak earlier in the last hour freely, and I appreciate you weighing in. Let me ask you one last question, Maeve.
Sure.
Do you know personally many of the Ethiopians living in Israel, or do you have good connections that you can give an educated?
I get information. I don't have my family member, or I don't have anyone that I know as such, but
right.
I get credible information on those people that are being mistreated. And
So let's just say those that Israel brought over, so the Ethiopian Jews that Israel brought over in the past, and there was a lot of celebration when they came into the country. Then there was the challenge because the rabbis said, well, you're not legitimately Jewish, you know, we have to go through it. And then people thought that wasn't fair, so there were debates about that. But from what you understand, we're not talking about the recent refugees, but we're talking about those that Israel brought over. All right, to that.
Okay.
From what you understand, is their living condition better now in Israel than it was in Ethiopia, from what you understand?
Don't get me, you know what, sir? I don't know this question. It will answer itself, okay? They're coming from Africa where the living condition was so low. Of course, I cannot even compare. I would not answer that one by saying yes or no. We cannot compare the living condition in Israel to that of in Ethiopia. Okay, I mean, to answer your question, of course they got a better life, but you know what? They're losing their dignity.
No,
that's a big fact.
That's a very
law-abiding, hard worker.
Yeah, and let me just say this, ma'am. That's why I asked the question. I was not setting you up. That's why I asked the question. So
no,
let me just say this.
I've got
a break, but let me just make this last comment. The Ethiopians tend to have a good reputation. They tend to be people that come across as humble and gracious in demeanor. So when there has been mistreatment, there often is Israeli sentiment on their behalf, especially when they felt they were being mistreated by the religious Jews, the rabbis that said that they weren't legitimately Jewish and had to convert to rabbinic Judaism. But thank you for weighing in. Thank you for sharing what you did. Much appreciated, babe. And let's stand together for justice for everyone and for Israel to abide by the highest of standards. Thank you for the call.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, you know what that music means. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown, welcome to the broadcast, 866-34-TRUTH. A little later in the show, I'll open up the Hebrew Scriptures with you, give you some thoughts and insights. Okay, just, this is not thoroughly Jewish, but I just want to mention this, just interesting news, all right? Eurovision is this massive media event, music performance event in Europe, as the Eurovision title tells you. And it's quite far-reaching in terms of who's included in it. And the winner of the Eurovision competition, I mentioned this earlier in the week, was a man who goes by the name of Conchita Wurst, W-U-R-S-T, from Austria. A man wearing a dress, drag queen, and a beard. So a bearded man, but a bearded man who looks like a bearded woman and sings like a bearded woman. And has quite a, well, anyway, enough said with that. Well, Russia now says it wants a more pure and straight Eurovision that Russia's had. Russia's also passed an anti, or they want to pass, or have they passed an anti-profanity bill? It's absolutely wild. Absolutely wild. 866-34-TRUTH. You've got some Jewish-related questions before I go to Hebrew Scripture, some other news. So the Russia thing, that was just thrown in there. Let's go to Fort Lee, New Jersey. Laura, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you. I'm in Israel, doctor, every 2 months. I returned in April. I'll be back in the middle of June. When was Andrew and your other caller in Israel last? They probably never. They looked at a YouTube video. This is anti-Semitism from these two callers and from the world. Israel, the tiny, tiniest country that doesn't have a right to defend itself. Remember that. That's anti-Semitic. And to put Israel at a higher standard more than any country is also anti-Semitic. And I'm quoting someone, Alan Dershowitz, who I don't agree with. He's a big liberal. This is incitement, anti-Semitism. When were those callers last in Israel? You know, so this is a lie. I was there with the Ethiopian fly thing, and I've been there. I've been going now for 31 years. Israel treats everybody terrifically. Maybe there's certain things, but I'm sick and tired of this anti-Semitism from your two callers. Let them go back to their own Arab countries and see if they like that. This is anti-Semitism big. And again, I'm there every 2 months.
This is not happening.
They're a bunch of liars, those two. They're anti-Semites. With Obama, with this horrible John Kerry, who's starting an intifada, a next world war, a war in Israel, thanks to Obama, an anti-Semite, and John Kerry, anti-Semite, and this whole liberal State Department. So this is all a bunch of lies.
All right, Laura, hang on. Let me just ask you this quick question, Laura. The second caller, the African gentleman, said that he prays for Israel and financially supports Israel, and his brother teaches Hebrew to Africans, and he doesn't want Israel to get a bad name among the Africans. So, again, I don't think Israel is responsible to just incorporate every refugee. I mean, I read stats in terms of Israel doing way, way, way beyond what other countries do and the challenges of doing it. But I didn't, and I've just been reading reports about world anti-Semitism and Holocaust denial, so I mean, we're all over that. And of course, I completely differ with Mr. Obama's policies and Mr. Kerry's attempts to push Israel into certain things. So I'm completely against that and have grave concerns about where our current administration is going. But say just, you know, Andrew that had called in, you know, he seemed to be someone genuinely concerned about Israel and Israel's reputation and not wanting Israel to have a bad reputation. That doesn't sound anti-Semitic to me.
He saw a YouTube video. YouTube, you go by a YouTube video?
Oh, yeah. I said that as well. But would an anti-Semite be jealous for the good reputation of Israel?
I don't buy that. Again, you're there often. Again, I'm there every 6 weeks to 2 months, every single year with my business.
So in other words, you feel that...
I don't see any of this. This is nonsense to hurt Israel. Look, everything gets blamed on Israel. They start all the wars. Nothing's been said about Syria killing over 200,000 Syrian children, etc. Nothing's ever said. Israel is always attacked. We're only
I quoted Fuad Ajami as
right.
Well, in terms of Israel uses tear gas and there's world uproar. Iraq, Saddam Hussein uses nerve gas and nobody talks about it. I've often pointed that out. Documented the UN's biased treatment, how Israel's held to a different standard, on and on and on. And I, of course, you can't just go by a YouTube video. I just be careful, though. Look, there's plenty of anti-Semitism out there, Laura. There is plenty of anti-Semitism. I just don't want to mischaracterize it when it's genuinely not there. In other words, as a friend of Israel, when I see Israel not doing rightly, because the people of Israel are human beings like everyone else, then I want to say, hey, come on, we've got to do better than this. We've got to hold to a higher standard. And that's why many Israelis demonstrate about these things as well, because they agree. But hey, Laura, I'm all for exposing anti-Semitism and letting the truth come out. And that's one reason we take calls to discuss things both ways. So thanks for weighing in. And those that will be joining me on the tour in Israel, you'll get to see a lot of things firsthand and a lot of things you'll notice and take in and interact with. I think it'll be really eye-opening for you. All right. I intended to end this last week. In fact, I did. Last Friday was the last day, but then we kept getting calls and requests this week. I thought, all right, I'll just continue this through this week. Here's the deal. My joy to announce to you that the Tree of Life version, the very first printed copies, 20,000 copies heading over to the States. I don't know exactly where they are now. We should have them within 2 weeks. And we have 1,000 of the first 20,000. There are several ministries that were able to get the first 1,000. We are one of them. It's a complete translation of the entire Bible by a team of Messianic Jewish scholars, leaders, theologians, Christian leaders, a team effort together. It reads well. It reads clearly. And one of the really neat things about it is that it is full of messianic sensitivities in the text and will open your eyes to Jewish roots of the faith just as you read it, but in a way that's not overwhelming. It's a $30 Bible. We were supposed to offer it for like a gift of $50 or more. I didn't know that, so I said your gift of any size. So that's what we've done now for a couple of weeks. We just ask you to be as generous as you can. Those who can give more, help those who can give less. 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. One more time, that's 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown.
your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Here's a neat quote from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In my office in Jerusalem, there's an ancient seal. It's a signet ring of a Jewish official from the time of the Bible. The seal was found right next to the Western Wall, and it dates back 2,700 years to the time of King Hezekiah. Now, there's a name of the Jewish official inscribed on the ring in Hebrew. His name was Netanyahu. Welcome to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, 866-34-TRUTH. let's see here. This is a report from Haaretz, a very liberal newspaper in Israel. Liberal MSNBC TV and radio host Ed Schultz made his conservative critics very happy when he tweeted on Monday that homosexuals were, quote, really the ones being persecuted in Hitler's Germany. The tweet was deleted several minutes after it was posted, but by then it had been seen and saved for posterity, enabling critics such as the Tea Party News Network and the Breitbart News Network to have a field day. And the Tea Party News Network wrote, Schultz's revisionism for the sake of pandering to homosexual activists is simply nauseating. While it is certainly true that Hitler's genocidal regime did target homosexuals, to trivialize the persecution of the Jews is both insensitive and shocking. Though it's important to remain mindful that the Holocaust was not exclusively an elimination of Jews and an honor all the victims of Hitler's regime, for Schultz to purposely skew history in this way is unacceptable and frankly too closely akin to Holocaust denial. Schultz's tweet was accompanied by an image of a webpage that reported on the thousands of gays that the Nazis reportedly put to death or otherwise interned in the odious death camps. According to Breitbart, Schultz's tweet was provoked by a statement by Republican Congressman Louis Gohmert comparing the language and tactics of militant gay activists to those of the Nazis. The plot continues to thicken. How about this? Just posted today on Jihad Watch. We've been talking about Boko Haram. We've been asking the question, why didn't America declare Boko Haram a terrorist group years ago when they were presented with evidence? Why did someone like me, an observer, reading reports, reading online news, not with special connections, giving me information, why did I know about Boko Haram for a while? And their atrocities have been documented for years, and now everyone's just learning about them. So Robert Spencer reports on Jihad Watch, Christian teen whose father and brother were murdered by Boko Haram denied U.S. visa. Gosh. Meanwhile, the U.S. is importing whole communities of Muslims from Somalia and elsewhere and dropping them down in American communities without any attempt to discern if any of the immigrants thus brought in have jihadist tendencies, and without equipping the host communities to deal with what they might encounter from the newcomers, to take any such precautions would be, quote, racist and Islamophobic. Here's this information now. A 15-year-old girl who witnessed the murder of her father and teenage brother at the hands of Boko Haram terrorists says she's decided to tell her story after the group kidnapped almost 300 schoolgirls last month in the same village in northern Nigeria where she grew up. Deborah Peters, speaking Tuesday at the Hudson Institute in Washington, D.C., recalled how in 2011 members of Boko Haram came to her home in Chibok, where she lived with her brother and father, who was a pastor of a local church. Three men knocked on our door, and then my brother opened the door for them, she said, and they asked him, "Where's your dad?" He told them, "My dad's in the bathroom taking a shower." The men said her father was wasting their time, so they take him out of the bathroom. They told him he should deny his faith. He told them he can't deny his faith, so they told him they're going to kill him if he didn't deny his faith. But he told them that he should rather die than go to hellfire. So my dad refused to deny his faith, and they shot him three times in the chest. Then the terrorist shot her brother three times. They tied her up and left her lying between two corpses. She's in a state of shock. She's been denied entry. She's been denied entry by the U.S. Denied a visa. You gotta be kidding me. We'll be right back.
Fire we want, for fire we please, and the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I want to just get into we've talked about Islam. It's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. We've talked about Islam. We've talked about Boko Haram. I just want to stay with this one more moment. Joey, I want to play a couple of clips here, and we'll start with number 15. And it's Bill Maher. Bill Maher, he's interacting with Arianna Huffington, she of the Huffington Post. So these folks are as liberal as you can get, but Bill Maher has made comments recently about the gay mafia, and he's raising issues about Islam and why can't you connect Boko Haram to Islam and why can't you connect Islam with terror and this type of dialogue and what's a mischaracterization and what's not. So let's just listen. If you've got a Jewish-related question or even an Islam-related question, feel free to give me a call at 866-34-TRUTH. Let's start with this dialogue, clip number 15.
If 84% of Brazilians thought that death was the proper penalty for leaving Catholicism, wouldn't that be a bigger story?
Yeah, but the point is that you cannot put all that together with the entire Islam or all Muslims. I mean, that's where it becomes dangerous. And that's where, unfortunately, a lot of conversation goes sometimes.
Where it becomes dangerous is that liberals like yourself do not stand up for liberalism. Liberalism means, one, mostly equality of women.
Yes.
Free speech.
And there's also...
No death threats.
Okay.
All right. Now, Dinesh D'Souza, so conservative Christian thinker, he is going to weigh in. This is clip number 16, and he's now weighing in on the subject of Islam, multiculturalism with Bill Maher. Number 16.
There's a civil war in the mind of the liberal. On the one hand, you have the defense.
We're right here, dude.
I know. No, it's in your head.
Tell me about my brain some more,
right,
please.
So on the one hand, you're a defender of individual rights. Mm-hmm. And if this were the Catholic Church. Right, and minorities. If it was the Catholic Church, you'd be all on it.
Right.
But on the other hand, you're committed to multiculturalism. And Islam is a victim. And we don't want to make the Muslims feel bad. And so these two impulses have got to be brokered one against the other. And that's why there's a protection of Islam. It's not, the problem isn't the Muslims. The problem is all the multiculturalists on campus who protect and defend them.
Ah. All right. So he is now saying, listen, Dinesh D'Souza is saying that the issue is, okay, liberals want to be tolerant, accepting, and so on. But now you've got Muslims acting, not all Muslims, but you've got enough radical Muslims acting in these horrific ways. Where is the condemnation that should come? And where is the connection of at least some Islamic theology that points you in this direction? So again, back to Bill Maher, clip number 17, as he weighs in, talking about Boko Haram. And come on, look at how Islam treats women. This is what he's saying. Look at what they've done, kidnapping these girls, selling them to slavery. How can you not connect that to their religious faith? Let's listen to Bill Maher.
There's no mention here of connecting this to the religion, which is always what I am seeking to do, because I think that's the elephant in the room, and that in the religion at large, women are seen as property, second class at best, often as property. Shouldn't that be brought to light in this debate as well?
Ah, I agree. Can't surprise to find myself in agreement with Bill Maher on a number of occasions here. Well, Matt Welch now joins in, and this again is part of the mentality to say, look, Islam has no monopoly on these types of things. This is found obviously in other religions, and you know, the Christians are just as bad, this kind of mentality. Matt Welch is the editor-in-chief of Reason Magazine, co-author with Nick Gillespie of the Declaration of Independence, How Libertarian Politics Can. And so clip number 18, Matt Welch is going to jump in, and again, further interaction with Bill Maher, the subject radical Islam, the subject Islamic ideology, the subject Boko Haram. Clip number 18.
I don't think Islam has any monopoly on darkness and nutbags and crazy rhetoric and violence.
Kind of they do.
No, they really don't have a monopoly.
Not a monopoly, but perspective is important.
Okay. Let's look at how long we've had people running around making excuses to hurt other people. And Islam is a part of that tradition, but so has Christianity been.
But that's, yes,
slavery was defended strongly.
If this was the 14th century, yes. I would be coming down on the Christians because that's when they were too violent.
You wouldn't have television, so you
could be 18th.
Okay, but
you're right
that's
about
the
it,
point,
yeah.
is that religions and cultures change. In the 14th century, it was the Christians, but this isn't the 14th century.
Ah, well, Dinesh D'Souza makes a great point in response. And look, just look at terrorist acts around the world. Look at terrorist acts around the world and ask yourself this question, who is behind it? Which people, which religion, which groups, if you can characterize them, are perpetrating these acts in a major way? So the discussion continues, clip number 19.
If you look today, you do see that while the vast majority of Muslims are by no means terrorists, it does seem that the vast majority of terrorist incidents do involve some aspect of the Muslim world. You don't see a whole lot of Buddhist suicide bombers. I'm still waiting for the Koreans to show up.
And also that they draw support from the general population. There was a Pew poll of Egypt, which is a leading Muslim country, maybe the leading Muslim country, and something like 80 or 90% believe that death is the proper punishment for leaving the religion.
Ah, exactly. So please show me a country with a large Christian population that has a death penalty for leaving Christianity, that has a death penalty if you convert to Islam or if you convert to Hinduism or something else. well, while we're on this, let's just stay with it for another moment. The whole question of Islamophobia. And okay, if you think your friendly Muslim neighbor is actually just waiting for the moment when you're not looking to chop your head off, and this is someone you've known for the last 20 years, a hardworking family man, and you know that you would have trusted him before, but now you're suspicious and you think, I think he's just set me up these last 20 years because if when I look away, he's just going to pull out a sword and behead me, shouting out Allahu Akbar. Well, then that would be Islamophobia. That even someone you know and you've trusted is actually a terrorist. However, to recognize the violent theology of Islam, to recognize that a couple hundred million plus Muslims worldwide believe in jihad as a fundamental pillar of Islam and on different level, and I don't know what the number is that want to enforce Sharia law, well, to recognize that as not being Islamophobic. So Ayan Hirsi Ali is a courageous woman who's speaking out against Islam, is going to speak at Brandeis University, and she gets canceled, and that even troubled Bill Maher as well. Clip number 22.
We all know Ayan Hirsi Ali, right? She was going to speak at Brandeis, but she has called Islam the new fascism, so they said she could not speak, and they said she was Islamophobic. Christopher Hitchens said, Islamophobic, a word created by fascists and used by cowards to manipulate morons.
It's a great
because
book.
To be phobic is to be scared of something that you're not usually scared of, like the great outdoors, but to be phobic about honor killings or throwing acid in girls' faces or marrying them off when they're 8 years old.
Good for you, Bill. Sure, it doesn't mean anything to him that I'm saying good for you, but glad to hear that. Now, he'd say, well, you don't get it. You don't get it. You are part of the religious right just in the Christian realm, etc. But I think even Bill Maher has to recognize, okay, the fact of the matter is we are not advocating these horrific things. And by the way, Bill Maher doesn't like the term Islamophobia. Doesn't he use the term homophobia? One last clip, Dinesh D'Souza weighing in on this whole issue of Ayan Hirsi Ali and Brandeis University. Clip number 22.
Universities exist to have intelligent people come and challenge and offend
right.
the opinions of the predominant forces on the
exactly.
campus. Ayan Hirsi Ali is a woman of undisputed intelligence. Mm-hmm. She was a member of parliament. She's at Harvard. And so this is the illiberal mentality.
Yeah, by the way, thanks, Joey. That was 23. It was a typo on my report that said 22. I asked for 22 twice. Joey. Joey rescues us once again. By the way, I've had these quotes. We've had them on hold. It just didn't have the right day to get to them. We ran out of time or too many calls or other issues to deal with. But again, as Dinesh D'Souza says it, if you look today, you do see that while the vast majority of Muslims are by no means terrorists, the vast majority of terrorists are Muslims. Now, Matt, I won't post this on Facebook, but I will send it to Nancy. I did take a picture of Matt sitting in the dark room with I don't know what it is on his head. It looks like a sheet wrapped up with ice on the inside. Matt's not feeling well today. So an ice pack. My ice pack? No. Okay. I didn't know I had an ice pack. All right, well, poor Matt. Should I post it, Joey, on Facebook? Poor Matt? No, Matt says no. All right, I'll send it to Joey, though.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, okay, Matt, good comment there. No, I'm not posting the picture of Matt on Facebook. I did send it to Nancy, but Nancy won't post it because she likes Matt too. We all like Matt. But he's smiling, but he's got that ice pack and on his head, and the ice pack is kind of wrapped, so it looks like he's got a hat like an African. I've seen African women wear hats like that, so that's kind of a good picture there. All right, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Yes, difference between radio and TV. Let me open the Hebrew Scriptures for you for a moment, all right? In the first hour, I talked a little bit about the book of Job, and as I'm working through it in my commentary, I keep looking at words that are used and how often they're used. And certain words have a tremendous concentration in the book of Job. And it's not surprising given the subject matter. And sometimes a word might occur 10 times in the Hebrew Bible and 6 times are in Job, or 4 times in the Hebrew Bible and 3 times in Job, or 65 times and 40 times in Job. And so yeah, as I'm reading it, I'll catch certain things. I'll look at them. I'll notice, well, I wonder how often that word is used, and it's significant. And sometimes it's just the word itself that's interesting. So Job chapter 7, verse 1, as Job is speaking, in the midst of his agony, he now sees the larger agony of the human race. You know, you can be in the midst of celebration in life, just had a child, things are going great, just got a promotion on your job, your kids are doing well, you know, life is treating you well in that respect. And you can look around and see, yeah, a lot of good things happen. Yeah, our team won in a great game last night, and, you know, just all kinds of stuff, and our finances are solid, and this person was sick, they're better, and there's the positive side. And then there's the negative side, the death, the tragedy, the pain, the unbelievable human suffering, and on and on. And sometimes it depends on our perspective. In other words, when we are underprivileged, we relate to underprivileged people a lot more. When we are suffering, we relate to suffering people a lot more. I remember as a boy, drive past a big cemetery, New York area, and my dad asked me one day, how many dead people you think, or how many people you think in that cemetery? How many dead people? I said, I don't know. I mean, there are just so many grave sites and tombstones. And his answer, you know, how many? He said, well, all of them. It was just a silly little joke, and laughed, and, you know, maybe one or two other jokes like that. Nothing, you know, vulgar, obscene, or denigrating. But I remember, As I was in the hearse going to my dad's funeral, he died suddenly of a heart attack, saw him one night, and later that night died at the age of 63. And in 1977, you know, just shattered and weeping. And I remember thinking, how could I have ever cracked a joke in my life about a cemetery or about death? I mean, it struck me as the most horrific thought imaginable. And many times we're not sensitive to things because we're not close enough to them. We're not sensitive to them because we haven't gone through it ourselves. You know, look, I think about starving children. I think about kids in need. We support our missionaries who are helping the poor and needy around the world. But I'm not devastated by it day and night because I'm not close enough to it day and night. So Job now in his shattered state and having lost everything suddenly sees the world differently and sees the terrible suffering of the human race. And he says this in Job chapter 7, verse 1. Truly, man has a term of service on earth, and his days are like those of a hireling. The word for man there in Hebrew is enosh. Now, enosh can just mean man, humankind, but it often refers to man in his weakness, humanity in its weakness. Not so much sinful weakness, but frailty. So that's the word that Job uses there, enosh, man in his weakness. But the word for a term of service in Hebrew is tsava. Now you say, tsava, where have I heard that? Well, if you've heard of the military, the Israeli military, that is how the military is described. It's the word for army. And if you've ever heard the term the Lord of hosts, Adonai Tzvaot, that's the word in the plural, Tzava Tzvaot, the Lord of the armies of heaven, Yahweh, the Lord of the armies of heaven. And here it's just the word for servitude or someone serving in the army. The complete Jewish Bible says human life on earth is like serving in the army. N.E.T. does not humanity have hard service on earth. King James is there not an appointed time to man upon earth. It's really not appointed time. That's why New King James says, is there not a time of hard service for man on earth? In point of fact, it's like being enlisted against your will in the military. And you are a conscripted servant. You have now, you're recruited into the military, and you have a time of service in the military, and it's against your will. And it's also for a limited time as well. And Job says that's how it is for mankind on the earth, for humanity in its weakness. That's how it is. The pain, the suffering, the turmoil, and you're here today, and you're gone tomorrow. That's his perspective. But of course, in the midst of that pain, he does have hope for a redeemer. He does have hope for a future. And it's a constant battle and agony in the book from the high points to the low points. Well, just a little Hebrew insight on this thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And what I'm saying is no big revelation. What I'm saying is commonly known to those reading the Hebrew text. Have you gotten your copy of the Tree of Life version of the entire Bible, the first ever team effort, Messianic Jewish Christian scholars working together, theologians, leaders, to put out a complete translation of the Old and New Testament for the first time available, the shipment on its way to us. We recommend a gift of $30 or more, but some of you can give much more. Some of you can pay for 3 or 5 or 10 or 100 Bibles, and others, whatever you scratch together is going to be less than that. Those who give more can help those who give less. So be generous, give as you can, and make sure you get a copy. I meant to, and we did. We ended it last week. I instructed our staff. The offer ends last week. And then we kept getting requests and said, all right, we'll continue it into the week. So call now, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Once more, that's 1-800-278-9978. Your generous gift, and we will send you Tree of Life version of the Bible. My bottom line today, in the midst of human suffering and pain, in the midst of our compassion for the hurting, let us never lose hope in God's redemptive power.